thank you for being here. I'm curious, first of all, about your interest in mathematics, where that started. Does that go way back to your childhood in the early days? Or?
As with most mathematicians, the answer is yes. I was always interested in mathematics as a kid. I was perennially frustrated in school, not being allowed to get one of the later grade math books to read for fun. I can remember sneaking into my parents' bedroom and stealing one of my dad's engineering textbooks. I still remember the one. It was on Laplace transforms. And I was so excited because it had all kinds of math in there that I didn't know anything about. And I tried to read it, and I tried to read it, and I couldn't make heads or tails of all those squiggly S signs and Greek letters and things like that. So I was perennially frustrated, but kept going and took delight in mathematics and eventually learned some.
Uh-huh. Where did you grow up, actually?
I grew up in the far eastern suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Miles south of Lake Erie.
Uh-huh.
The great thing about living in Cleveland, Ohio is that every place else I've ever lived, I really like and I'm happy.
You're suggesting that...
Including Cleveland.
Oh, okay.
It just makes you a contented person.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. When you talk about your interest in mathematics, for some, there are various directions they come from. One is through puzzles and games and things like that. Was that part of what you grew up with?
Not so much.
And the other one is competitions. Starting with things like math counts and the AMC competitions and so on.
I didn't really like that all that much either. To tell you the truth, I hate little math puzzles and games.
Uh-huh.
And I read the Putnam things and they make my head hurt. I never got into that. What I liked doing, and what I still like doing, is just drawing pictures of mathematical things and trying to figure things out with pictures.
Now, was there an art side to your family that might have been connected with? No?
No.
No. A parent who was not an artist or liked drawing and things like that?
No. Neither of my parents is artistic. I have no art training, mm-hmm. and I'm not all that artistic, but I do like drawing pictures to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
I went to university and went into mechanical engineering, largely because I thought I would be a draftsman. I really loved drafting. When I was in high school, took a course in drafting. My father is a mechanical engineer, so I grew up seeing blueprints, things like that. I love that stuff.
So, where did you do your undergraduate?
I did my undergraduate at the University of Toledo, in Toledo, Ohio.
Right.
Great place.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were doing your undergraduate degree, clearly in the engineering department and from an engineering perspective, was the mathematics of that of interest then?
So, my path to becoming a mathematician is due in large part to good fortune, because while I was at the University of Toledo, I happened to take my introductory calculus course from a wonderful mathematician named Henry Wente, whom you may have heard of, who discovered the minimal surfaces of non-zero genus, the Wente-Torii, and these sorts of things. He's just a great character, an amazing mathematician. And I just happened to get him for a calculus course and was just so charmed and so moved by the way that he thinks. He too is extremely visual and imaginative. And that really came out in his lectures. And took 9 courses from him when I was an undergraduate. I was his biggest fan, and I still am. And that is one of the things responsible for me becoming a mathematician.
So you took these courses while you were an engineering undergraduate.
That's correct.
And then what was the next decision point?
So the next decision point was what to do for graduate school, whether to stay in engineering, move to pure mathematics. I took the middle road and did a PhD in applied mathematics at Cornell University.
Right.
At that time, there was a lot of excitement and interest in dynamical systems and bifurcation theory. Gleick's book came out when I was a college student, and it was full of wonderful pictures. And so I went to Cornell, one of the hotbeds of dynamical systems activity, and worked with Philip Holmes, who's, again, one of these fantastically imaginative people who I counted my good great fortune to have run into him and to have learned from him.
Now, I know Phil Holmes in several different contexts, one of which was in celestial mechanics later on, and working in those areas. What were you working on in dynamical systems?
So Phil has a series of works that are maybe not as well known as some of his other stuff on applications of knot theory to dynamical systems and bifurcations. Beautiful papers, really wonderful. And I ran across these works based on some original ideas from Joan Berman and Bob Williams. And as soon as I heard Phil give a talk on that, I knew that's what I want to do my thesis on. And I never looked back. And so I did a thesis on knotted periodic orbits in dynamical systems. And, well, the thesis had a lot of pictures in it.
Now, were you at that time also into computer graphics and those kinds of representations?
So, I certainly enjoyed that and appreciated it. I'm a little more comfortable with napkins and church bulletins and scraps of paper, things like that. That's where a lot of my drawing happens.
From that time to now?
Till now, yeah.
So we were at Cornell for both your master's and PhD then?
That's correct.
Right, okay. And then what?
Let's see. Well, I finished up my PhD for the last year at Princeton because Phil Holmes moved there and I accompanied him. Had a 6-month hiatus at the Institute and then went to the University of Texas at Austin to work with Bob Williams as a postdoc. And again, had the wonderful good fortune to work with someone who's really just great with this wonderful imagination and this very unique way of looking at mathematics. And that's Bob Williams.
Oh, Bob Williams, right.
Yeah. Yes.
Although there were other people in Texas, I recall, doing interesting things in dynamical systems, in various kinds of applied mathematics, too.
Right. Not to mention all the great topology that's there.
That's true. Beyond point set topology.
Right, right. Yeah. John Lukey, Cameron Gordon, lots of great geometric topology going on, and going on still.
So when you were looking for a faculty position, what were you looking for?
I was looking to survive, like everyone else.
Yes.
I just didn't want to die. It's, one has low expectations going into finding a tenure track position anymore. And that was that's true back in the day. I think it's still true.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough, but as with everything else in my career, well, good luck counts for a lot.
Mm-hmm. But it does seem that you've fairly quickly found a niche and a place where you could do really interesting work, both on the research side and leading into even teaching innovations. Yeah,
I believe so. When I was a graduate student, I had this vision in my head of applying topology and being able to use all that beautiful mathematics that I fell in love with in the service of real practical problems. Mm-hmm. And that was a lonely existence for a long time because people are skeptical about such things until there's proof that it actually is useful. And so it was a discouraging existence for a while. But fortunately, I'm either pig-headed enough or was clueless enough to just keep going, despite what some people thought was wise or not wise. And it seems as though, mostly based on the work of lots of people who have entered this area, that opinions have changed and are still changing, and that people are recognizing that even the most abstract branches of mathematics, mm-hmm. such as algebraic topology, can be put to really good use.
Mm-hmm. And I think you won this year's Chauvenet Prize for exposition.
That's right.
For essentially, it seems, summarizing that whole area and showing how exciting it has become.
Exactly. And that was a wonderful event. But really a testimony to the people whose work I was writing about,
mm-hmm.
to Gunnar Carlson and others, mm-hmm. who have been doing some great stuff in that, mm-hmm. in that sphere.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel, in a sense, a parent of some of that kind of effort? Or?
Oh, well, I wouldn't say parent. I would say participant.
Uh-huh.
I'm really happy that there's so much activity and interest in applied topology.
Mm-hmm.
At
mm-hmm.
this time, we're running a year-long special program at the mm-hmm. Institute for Mathematics and its Applications,
mm-hmm.
the IMA. And although it took a little bit of work to convince people that there was actually enough interest in
mm-hmm.
that domain to run a year-long program, what we have found is that for the first workshop on topological data analysis that is happening in less than a month,
mm-hmm.
They are overbooked.
Mm-hmm.
They've had to shut down people who are trying to get into the program because it is their regular lecture room is overfull, their overflow room
mm-hmm.
is overfull, there
mm-hmm.
are too many people interested in coming
mm-hmm.
to accommodate it. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really good about that.
Mm-hmm. In what directions is your own research continuing?
So I'm doing quite a lot with applications of algebraic topology. From a bird's eye point of view, I've spent a lot of effort over the past, let's say, 7-8 years, convincing people in engineering that sometimes it's really worth knowing what the homology of a space is. Depending on the application domain.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know where there are holes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in a communications network, maybe in a sensor network, maybe in a configuration space for a collection of robots. Lots of different domains. So, that has gone really well. And there are a lot of people in engineering, in data analysis, who now get it.
Mm-hmm.
That homology of a space tells you where the holes are. Good. That's important. What I want to do is now go back to the algebraic topology and say, what's the next tool that we can export from pure mathematics over to applications?
Mm-hmm.
Homology is kind of old school,
mm-hmm.
right? Has been around for a while, and it's not the most exciting thing that's happened in mathematics in the past couple of years. However, there are deeper tools that I think are just as useful, if not more useful, that I'm interested in pushing over the fence. For the past 2-3 years, and into the future, I have been and shall be working on sheaf theory. I believe that sheaves are the next big tool from algebraic topology that are ready to be moved over the fence. The reason for that is, if you think about a sheaf as a data structure over a space, where, according to the definition, a sheaf associates to regions in a space some sort of data, let's say of an algebraic form, then by using tools such as homology and cohomology associated to cosheaves and sheaves, respectively, you can say not only where are the holes in your space, where are the holes in your data structure, sitting over the space. And once you put it in that language, then all of a sudden it's clear that has got to be useful. And so I've spent the past 2-3 years finding applications of sheaf cohomology and related ideas into networks, information flow, optimization, and I see quite a lot left to be done in that program.
Now, on the teaching side, clearly I'm just hearing about your work on your own online course and that sort of thing. How did your career develop on the teaching side?
So, I am an applied mathematician, and my specialty is in the bridge between very, very ostensibly pure regions of mathematics and applications in engineering. And this means that in the perennial tension between mathematicians teaching calculus and engineering departments wanting their engineering students to learn calculus their way, I'm the right person to build a truce. And so at all of those schools in which I have taught calculus, Georgia Tech, University of Illinois, University of Pennsylvania, they all have really strong, large engineering schools, and they have a lot of engineering students. And when I walked into that situation, there was a lot of tension between engineering and math. I spent a decade solving those kinds of tensions, and in so doing, developing a calculus curriculum that is meant to give engineering students the types of tools that are really relevant to modern applications. When the calculus books that most of us use were written, the biggest problems in applied mathematics were how to build an airplane wing to the optimal geometry, etc., etc. We have different problems now. A lot of our problems involve data. They involve very high-dimensional spaces and transformations between them. And the calculus curriculum is not caught up with that. So I have spent more than a decade trying to modify the calculus curriculum. When the froth and activity in MOOCs, or massive open online courses, came into being, I saw this as an opportunity to get some of my ideas out there to a wider audience than 100 students per semester. And so I took a year out of life and built an animated course that explain some of those ideas.
What is the current status of that course? Has it been run yet, or...?
It has run twice.
Okay.
Once in the spring of 2013, once in the summer. In those two runnings, we had a total of 100,000 students sign up, but since it's free and demands nothing, only a little more than half of them show up and watch videos or do some of the homework. if you look at how many people do everything in the course from beginning to end, it's very small.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about 2,000 people or so.
Mm-hmm.
But if you consider that most people are using this to get a new perspective,
mm-hmm.
or to enhance a course that they're already taking, then I'm not disappointed in that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the number of videos that have been viewed, it's well over 500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of time that people have spent learning calculus ideas from these videos, it's a huge amount of time in terms of man hours.
Where do you see this going now?
I wish I knew. I am very optimistic that we're going to be able to take advantage of the things you can do online and with video, that we're going to be able to use animation in a way that explains mathematical principles more beautifully than has ever been done before. Students are going to be able to pause, rewind, replay.
Mm-hmm.
This has allowed me to make my lectures much denser than they would normally be
mm-hmm.
at a blackboard. And this is great for students who want to have an accelerated pace
mm-hmm.
for learning things, or for whom review is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
At present, the course is running at a few, say 10 or a dozen select high schools
mm-hmm.
across the country, where the high school calculus teachers took my course in the spring or the summer, really liked it,
mm-hmm.
and want to share it with their
mm.
high school class. And so they are using a blended model where the students watch the videos,
mm-hmm.
but they have one-on-one instruction with the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a few schools in the Philadelphia area. There's one in Canada. The Stanford Online High School is using it.
Mm-hmm.
That pilot program is, we'll see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be running the course again in January of 2014. We'll see who it benefits.
Mm-hmm. When you were putting it together, can you see you've done it and it's been presented and all that? Are there ways in which you would want to improve it, change it, go the next step?
So, I was certainly under a lot of time pressure to build something beautiful quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That involved a pretty steep learning curve, since I don't have a background in arts and I was doing all my own drawing, and I had no background in audio and I was doing all my own audio. I had to build a sound closet in my house
mm-hmm.
and learn more than I ever thought I would know about frequency response curves. But I learned as I went along.
Mm-hmm.
After two iterations, I'm pretty happy with the way the course looks
mm-hmm.
and sounds. We had a graduate student and a postdoc who put a ton of effort into helping me with the assessments,
mm-hmm.
writing original homework problems, writing a wiki-based text to go along with it. We can't copy problems from other books because on this massive scale, that's a clear copyright
mm-hmm.
violation. So we had to build everything ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely room for improvement, but I'm hopeful that as more and more professors get in the game
mm-hmm.
and start producing creative content, that we'll see a rising tide that lifts the level of calculus instruction, if nothing else, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
There are many other areas of mathematics where professors will jump in
mm-hmm.
and see what can be done. Could you imagine teaching abstract algebra using a very visual medium?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I would have loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Or complex analysis
mm-hmm.
or dynamical systems. There are so many things that with the right
mm-hmm.
kinds of illustration
mm-hmm.
and animation, oh, it could open up
mm-hmm.
all the treasures that we have hidden to so many people for whom it's currently inaccessible.
This may be a separate kind of issue, but there was certainly periods in history, and fairly recently, where mathematicians, pure mathematicians in particular, were very suspicious of anything visual. That's misleading, it really doesn't. You might have the wrong intuitions and so on. And the early years of dynamical systems was plagued by those kinds of concerns from not those who were doing it, but from others too.
Yes, it was. And, well, I think you can guess where I fall on that issue, whether it's trying to read Gottschalk and Hedlund or trying to read Spanier. These are all excellent texts, excellent works, and I can't read them for more than 10 minutes without going and drawing some pictures to go along with it. These things come in waves, and they come in different styles, but there's an argument to be made that students now, having grown up with visual media in a way that was not the case 50 years ago, are wired differently and are wired to learn more visually. We'll see what happens when the next wave of anti-visualization hits, but I think it may be a ways off.
So, finally, where do you see yourself, say, 10 years from now?
Hopefully alive. Hopefully building more online courses. I have a few of those in me, and I would like to build some more. Hopefully, I will have, along with others, helped convince the engineering and or science world that sheaves and algebraic topology are useful and worth studying, and maybe I'll even be able to get out a book explaining sheaves in a way that makes sense.
But it might be 10 years from now a new kind of book. But it might be a new kind of book, which is you can only see on your tablet.
I would be
or read on your tablet.
Very happy if that were the case. And it may be.
So in a way, the technology is there, or will be developing in your direction to take advantage of just those things.
I certainly hope so.
Good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.